Ms. Woodward, PER Properties.
Yes.
Good morning, Commissioner Travelstead and members of the commission. PER Properties 12-0592 is requesting authorization to install a bulkhead, mooring dolphins and pilings, and to mechanically dredge approximately 118,039 cubic yards of state-owned submerged land during the initial cycle, and to maintenance dredge approximately 15,900 cubic yards during subsequent cycles on an as-needed basis for the construction of a grain terminal adjacent to their property at 3991 Elm Avenue, situated on the southern branch of the Elizabeth River in the city of Portsmouth. The project will require a subaqueous permit and a coastal primary sand dune and beach permit. The project is protested by an adjacent property owner. The subject property is situated on 16 acres of land. This property was purchased by PER from the city of Portsmouth in 2010. The site is located along the southern branch of the Elizabeth River, just north of the new South Norfolk Jordan Bridge. This is the subject site in here. The site has been used for industrial and commercial purposes for more than a century. You can see just north of the site is Norfolk Naval Shipyard up in here. This is the Norfolk Portsmouth Beltline Railroad Bridge. And this is a rather dated photograph. This is actually the former Jordan Bridge here. This is another aerial shot from 2011, again showing the subject site. And you can see here the construction for the new Jordan Bridge was underway. These images, which I stitched together, were taken last week. This is what the property looks like. Currently, you can see that the upland has been cleared in preparation for the grain storage facility. This is another view looking eastward across the river in the foreground. This is property that is currently owned by Mr. Dwight Dixon of Dixon Company. And again, PER's property is back here. To support the waterfront activities necessary for their terminal operations, PER is proposing to install a 945-foot-long steel sheet pile bulkhead with a 90-foot return on the north end to include an additional 61 linear feet of return and a 187-foot return on the south side. To construct the wharf, PER is proposing to fill 1.22 acres or 52,980 square feet of state-owned submerged land. This number has actually been revised from the number that was in your evaluation. The proposal also includes the conversion of 14,667 square feet of existing upland. Area in here, and this is being converted to subaqueous bottom. Just want to point out that the blue line represents mean low water here, and the PER is proposing to fill channelward of a bulkhead that is currently under construction by the EPA, and I'm going to talk in greater detail about that here shortly. The channelward limits of the wharf will be constructed using six 10-foot by 10-foot mooring dolphins. You can see those are indicated here by the larger red squares. Located between the mooring dolphins will be up to 60 2-foot by 2-foot pilings. Both railroad spurs, you can barely see the railroad spur in this image. I have a couple of better drawings that show that you'll see shortly. But the railroad spurs and the conveyor system will be used to store, deliver, and load agricultural commodities. So basically, from an operational standpoint, the grain will be barged in to the site from, say, Elizabeth City, for example. It will be unloaded in the barge storage and unloading area, which is this area in between the bulkhead and the mooring dolphins and pilings. The grain will then be transferred to silos located on the uplands and eventually moved via the conveyor system to a crane, which will then transfer the grain to ocean-going vessels. The wharf is designed and has been engineered to accommodate 900-foot-long Panamax vessels with beams of up to 105 feet. Tracks are being proposed along the entire length of the bulkhead here to accommodate the crane that will be positioned to load the grain onto the ship. To further accommodate these vessels, PER is also proposing to mechanically dredge 118,039 cubic yards of material to depths of minus 44 feet. Mean low water, as well as to maintenance dredge 15,900 cubic yards on an as-needed basis. A critical element to the design of the wharf was the required setback distance of 150 feet from the toe of the Federal Navigation Channel, and this was required by the Corps. This is another drawing that just depicts the extent of dredging, which you can see highlighted in the gray shaded area here. The area highlighted in red is the existing upland that will be converted to subaqueous bottom, and the green shaded areas represent the areas that PER is proposing to fill. The project site sits immediately adjacent to the Atlantic Wood Industries Superfund site. This is an active remediation project that is currently being conducted by the EPA. Basically, operations at this former wood treating facility ultimately led to the contamination of the site. And one of the main components of EPA's selected remedy includes the dredging of 315,000 cubic yards of contaminated sediments from the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. This is an image that was actually provided to VMRC staff earlier this year from the EPA, and the extent of the dredging being conducted by EPA is highlighted by the blue area. The consolidation of the material that is being removed is to occur mainly behind this offshore containment wall that is currently under construction. This offshore containment wall has an expected 100-year lifespan, and the construction is expected to be complete in 2013. So the dredging component of the remediation project will start in 2013 following the completion of the offshore containment wall, and that is expected to take 3 years. And PER cannot begin construction on any aspect of their proposed wharf until the EPA has completed its dredging in the areas in front of and adjacent to PER's property. So with the next couple of slides, I just want to walk you through some of the more detailed drawings, beginning at the northern end of the wharf. You can see here that I want to point out mean low water is indicated by the blue line. Again, the 10 by 10 mooring dolphins are indicated by the larger red squares, and the pilings are shown here indicated by the smaller red squares. PER is proposing to mitigate on-site for impacts to 14,504 square feet of non-vegetated wetlands, of which approximately 12,140 square feet qualifies as jurisdictional beach under state code criteria. And you can see here, I just want to point out that the here's the proposed bulkhead. So this area in here, channel ward of mean low water will be filled. These are some more detailed drawings showing the plan view mitigation area. This is a cross section down here. This mitigation area will be protected by the bulkhead. We move further south along the wharf. Again, mean low water is shown in blue. This is an area in which the existing upland here will be converted to subaqueous bottom. And again, this area in here will be converted to subaqueous bottom. As we move further south along the bulkhead, this area is proposed to be filled by PER. This is the southernmost limit of the bulkhead and of the wharf. The distance from the last 10-foot by 10-foot mooring dolphin is approximately 70 feet in here. I do want to point out that as part of the proposed drawings, the tracks for the crane do extend down to the end of the bulkhead, and you can see the return conveyor is shown here. And the contours, the depth contours that you see listed, these are the proposed contours following completion of the EPA's dredge remediation.
Justine, before you move off, what do you mean by return conveyor? What is that?
Well, this is the conveyor system that will transport the grain from the silos to the crane, and then the crane will operate along this track here to load the grain onto the large vessel.
Thank you.
This is a standard cross-section showing the bulkhead as well as the barge unloading and storage area. They are proposing to dredge to achieve a slope of 2.75 to 1, and channel ward of the outer limits of the wharf, they're proposing to dredge to minus 44 mean low water. This is another cross-section, again, showing the depth following the EPA's dredging, indicated by the hashed line, and the proposed depth that PER is proposing to dredge to. These are a couple of ground shots that were taken in late May. This is looking north towards the Beltline Railroad Bridge. You can see the beach here. There is a beach in Fort Smith. this is, again, looking north towards that railroad bridge. This image was taken and faces south towards the New Jordan Bridge, which you can see in the background. In this particular area, this portion of the shoreline will be excavated and converted to subaqueous bottom. This is another shot of some of the non-vegetated wetlands that will also be impacted as part of this proposal. This is a shot that I took when I first pulled up to the site during my very first site visit, and this actually gives you a perspective of the size of the vessels that will be utilizing this facility. This is the image that I showed before. This is the existing site conditions, and I've done my best to show on here what the site will look, well, the locations of the proposed bulkhead and the wharf, as well as the EPA's offshore containment wall. So this is the EPA's offshore containment wall, and this is approximately where the proposed bulkhead will be installed, and this is the outer limits of the wharf.
Excuse me, the Atlantic Wood Preservers, or whatever they're called, they're to the bottom of this picture?
Yes, that is correct. And these are actually may be difficult to see in the picture, but these are, I believe, some of the test pilings that are going in for EPA for the wall. So I want to talk a little bit more about the remediation project. Upon completion, the Commonwealth of Virginia, through DEQ, will assume responsibility for the long-term maintenance of the offshore sheet pile wall. Specific details have yet to be formalized between DEQ, PER, and the EPA concerning access rights and use of the upland property created by the offshore containment wall, but it has been expressed to us that ultimately PER intends to acquire, possibly through legislative action, title to the upland created as a result of the EPA's offshore containment wall, as well as title to the upland that will be created as a result of the current proposal. These are a couple of shots of that offshore containment wall. These were provided by the project remediation project manager, Randy Sturgeon, EPA. They were taken last month. This picture was taken from the top of the Jordan Bridge looking south. This is another shot. You can see the wall going in here, and it will extend all the way to the end of the berm here. So landward of the wall will be filled. The constraints of the site require that PER conduct their operations over the Atlantic Wood Industry Superfund containment area, as well as over the proposed southern fill area. PER believes that filling channelward of the EPA's containment wall should virtually eliminate the need for future maintenance and replacement of this section of the wall. So this is an overall plan view drawing, and this is the railroad spur that is being proposed here. Again, this is the EPA's wall here. This is the proposed bulkhead and the outer limits of the wharf. According to PER engineers, the railroad spur is designed at an absolute minimum radius and cannot be reduced any further without becoming inoperable. The project is protested by Mr. Dwight A. Dixon of Dixon Company, an adjacent property owner. This is the same plan view drawing I just showed you, but I've highlighted the existing property boundaries between PER and the property owned by Mr. Dixon. Mr. Dixon claims that PER seeks to dredge material from his submerged property without his permission. Since 2006, Mr. Dixon has claimed ownership of the submerged land extending from the upland to the channel of the southern branch of the Elizabeth River by virtue of a reduction of his title back to a 1711 King's Grant. At present, Mr. Dixon has no legal proceedings, deeds, or other legal documents affirming a claim of ownership of the river bottom. He recorded a deed of correction in 2006 in which he claimed ownership of 503 acres of property, which included major portions of subaqueous lands under the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. Recent legal proceedings, which ultimately resulted in a consent decree, were instigated by Tim Oaksman, General Counsel for the City of Portsmouth. Accordingly, the river bottom should be treated conclusively as the sole property of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Mr. Dixon also claims that the proposal will restrict his navigational access to the channel and that the entrance to the barge storage area, entrance to that area was right down here, that will block his property's commercial use by Panamax vessels, barges, and other commercial vessels. In his protest letter, Mr. Dixon also cites concerns regarding upland drainage issues, and he requests that an environmental impact statement be required. Mr. Dixon further indicated his plans to dredge to a maximum depth of minus 49 feet, extending from his property to the Norfolk and Portsmouth Beltline Railroad Bridge to accommodate vessels that will access his future import and export facilities. As a result, Mr. Dixon claims that PER's proposal will not be compatible with his plans to match the dredge depth which the Navy has proposed as part of their project to deepen 5 miles of the Norfolk Harbor Federal Navigation Channel.
Excuse me?
Yes.
How does Mr. Dixon propose to get to the river?
Well, this, these are
the
existing property boundaries.
Okay.
I believe that Mr. Dixon is here today and represented, and he could further answer that question.
Okay.
Comments were received by the Elizabeth River Project, who did express concerns with the lack of consideration to alternative development options to avoid the permanent loss of 1.28, which we now know is 1.22 acres of remediated river bottom, as well as the permanent loss of sandy beach habitat. And this, as they stated in their letter, is one of the last soft shorelines on the Elizabeth River extending from downtown Portsmouth to Paradise Creek. VIMS expressed several of the same concerns in their report. They further point out that although intense industrial uses continue in this vicinity, this section of the river is a confirmed anadromous fish use area and is designated as essential fish habitat for 14 federally managed species. VIMS suggests that if the project is allowed as proposed, strict water quality controls and a detailed ongoing monitoring plan during all phases of construction are essential for reducing environmental impacts from this project. These include, but are not limited to, floating turbidity curtains and oil booms, water and sediment testing during dredging activity, avoiding dredging during sensitive times for migrating anadromous fishes, the use of hydraulic instead of mechanical dredging if possible, upland erosion and sediment control devices, and stormwater management controls. VIMS advocates soil testing in the proposed upland excavation area to identify potential unknown upland contamination sources that might be released during dredging. During a meeting held on August 17, 2012, and attended by VMRC, DEQ, and staff to the Attorney General's office, DEQ expressed the need for assurance that PER's proposed grain terminal will not interfere with their ability to fulfill the Commonwealth's long-term operation and maintenance obligations associated with the remediation site. Staff received a letter from DEQ's Office of Remediation Programs. This letter was dated August 24, 2012. As stated in the letter, DEQ is not opposed to PER's proposed project at this time, but the project is complicated by its proximity to the AWI Superfund site, and therefore it does require coordination between PER, DEQ, and the EPA to ensure that the Commonwealth's interests are protected. Consequently, in their letter, they request that the Commission consider incorporating several permit conditions, which you can see listed up here, that specifically address long-term access to the property, the design of the PER bulkhead, coordination of the PER dredging with the Superfund dredging, operation and maintenance agreements, and bonding or financial assurance with respect to the development of the site. I do want to point out that following this meeting, VMRC staff was under the impression that DEQ would request that the commission withhold issuance of the permit until a copy of the binding agreement had been received. However, in the letter that we did receive yesterday, DEQ characterized their request differently and asked that the commission consider incorporating specific permit conditions. None of the other agencies that commented on the proposal had any outstanding concerns. This included the U.S. Coast Guard, the Department of Historic Resources, and the Department of Conservation and Recreation. The Portsmouth Wetland Board approved the project as proposed at their June 6, 2012 meeting. And just want to point out here, Portsmouth has also not adopted the Beaches and Dunes Ordinance, which is why we are hearing it, part of the reason we are hearing it today. In an email dated July 31st, 2012, Mr. Randy Sturgeon, who, as I previously mentioned, is the remedial project manager for the Superfund site, indicated EPA's support for land reuse and development at and near the site to the extent that the redevelopment does not interfere with the Superfund site cleanup. On behalf of the Portsmouth Port and Industrial Commission, Chairman Ann Kirk Mendes provided a letter dated May 29, 2012, in support of PER's proposed development, stating that the proposal effectively balances the city's interest in seeing an important commercial site restored to productive use with ongoing efforts to improve the environmental health of the Elizabeth River. She further stated that this proposed facility represents a responsible redevelopment that is welcomed by the city of Portsmouth. While staff is sensitive to the protestant's concerns, the applicant believes the proposed wharf appears to be located solely within their riparian area. Mr. Dixon's claim of ownership to the submerged bottom adjacent to his property has not been recognized in a court of law. Therefore, staff considers the submerged bottom channelward of mean low water as property of the Commonwealth. The other concerns raised by Mr. Dixon, including the upland drainage issues and the request for an environmental impact statement, are matters that staff feels are outside of the Commission's purview. Although Mr. Dixon has indicated plans to dredge between his property and the Beltline Railroad Bridge, a joint permit application has not been received by our agency for review. Staff acknowledges the substantial impacts to jurisdictional beach, non-vegetated tidal wetlands, and subaqueous habitats that would result from the construction of a grain terminal. The proposed site is located within a heavily industrialized section of the southern branch of the Elizabeth River, a prime location for this type of facility. However, given the substantial amount of proposed fill, further consideration should be given to minimize any unnecessary fill over state-owned subaqueous bottom, specifically at the southern terminus of the proposed bulkhead. Using the southernmost 10-foot by 10-foot mooring dolphin as a reference point, staff believes that a 70-foot section of the bulkhead and associated backfill could be reduced without compromising the overall functionality of the bulkhead and the upland operations that it will support. This modification may also alleviate riparian area concerns raised by Mr. Dixon. Therefore, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all of the factors contained in 28.2-1205A and 28.2-1403-10B, staff recommends approval of the project based on a 70-foot reduction in the length of the bulkhead at the southern end with the following special permit conditions. Permittee shall obtain all necessary property interest in the upland created as a result of the installation of EPA's offshore containment wall prior to construction of the activities authorized herein. The applicant must satisfy all federal and state requirements by obtaining clear right of access and use of the land. Permittee shall submit an alternative dredge material management plan prior to the commencement of dredging in the event the subaqueous material does not meet the criteria for disposal at the Craney Island dredge material management area. Permittee shall provide a post-dredging bathymetric survey of the dredged area within 30 days of the completion of the dredging. The survey shall be signed and dated by a hydrographic surveyor. The survey shall be referenced to mean low water and shall include depth measurements exterior to the limits of the dredge cut. A pre-dredging conference shall be held on-site prior to the commencement of the initial dredging and any subsequent maintenance dredging. The meeting shall be attended by the permittee, the dredging contractor, and a member of the VMRC staff. The meeting shall be held within 7 days prior to the commencement of dredging and shall include an inspection of the dredge area and a discussion of the terms and conditions of the permit. Permittee agrees there shall be no dredging from February 15th to June 15th during any year to protect migrating anadromous fishes. Permittee agrees to the implementation of strict water quality control standards, including the use of turbidity curtains surrounded by oil containment booms during piling installation and dredging to isolate and localize any potential contaminated materials which may become resuspended in the water column. At the request of DEQ, based on their ultimate responsibility for the long-term maintenance of the Atlantic Wood Industries remediation site, we would further recommend issuance of the permit following receipt of a binding agreement between PER, DEQ, and to include, as appropriate, EPA, that specifically addresses the design of the PER bulkhead, coordination of the PER dredging with the Superfund dredging, long-term access to the property, operation and maintenance agreement, and bonding or financial assurance with respect to the development of the site. According to 28.2-1206B of the Code of Virginia, riparian owners of commercial facilities providing services relating to the shipping of domestic or foreign cargo shall be exempt from the payment of rents and royalties, with the exception of the royalties associated with the removal of bottom material. Therefore, staff further recommends a one-time standard royalty payment of $53,117.55 for the dredging of 118,039 cubic yards of material at a rate of 45 cents per cubic yard and a permit expiration date of August 31st, 2017. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Justine, do we have a copy of the letter from DEQ?
Yes, that should be... in your packet.
You had indicated in your testimony that in your original meetings with DEQ that were going to request that those conditions be a part of a separate binding agreement. But now that we've received the letter, DEQ is requesting that those conditions actually be made a part of our permit. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So with DEQ now suggesting something a little bit different, does that change the staff recommendation at all?
I'll address that. We had felt like the preference was to have DEQ negotiate those issues and resolve those, and then we would be out of that debate relative to the Superfund site. It's hard to separate a lot of Superfund activity from the yard activity and the justification of one for the other, but that was our preference, and so that was our recommendation. I think we could accommodate these recommendations in permit conditions, but if you want to go that route, I do have a couple suggestions for some language change in two of them, if you want to go about putting them in our permit condition as opposed, or in our permit as conditions, opposed to just requiring those as official permit. And I want to clarify that we will recommend approval with the specific conditions that Justine outlined, but these items relative to AWI activities and PER and EPA, we just said need to be taken care of, and then the permit would be released upon concurrence that that was done. So we weren't recommending delaying action on the decision, but just delaying action issuance of the document. I will say that the agents are here today and address this issue. I think they've expressed a preference for permit conditions as opposed to having to do it before we actually issue the permit.
Is there any legal distinction between those two options? Either one satisfies staff?
They are, other than when they become permit conditions, the issue becomes at what point do we become a bit of a referee between DEQ and EPA and PER if they don't meet certain requirements or they can't quite agree on what should be done. The permit conditions were basically saying go forward, begin work, or hold off work until you get these under the permit. And if there's some debate between the two, then we're in the middle of it. If it were all handled beforehand and buttoned up, then, you know, I'm not so sure we would be. But as I said, some suggestions and language changes, I think, helps minimize that to some extent. And I'll share that with you at the appropriate time if that's what the applicant wants to do.
Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Okay.
So we'll have that in mind when we hear from the applicant. If you could put can you put the original recommendations on the screen?
And what I'm going to do is I'll hand out for you a list of the cabinet conditions recommended in the DEQ letter, along with some underlined additions there. I think Jack has a copy.
I have a copy.
From our perspective, as you look at this list, the first three really get at the applicant and doing things with EPA and DEQ, and so that seemed to be okay. They were related to access, plans for specifications of how things tie together the walls and make sure that one doesn't adversely affect the other, and coordinating with DEQ to the extent practical with regard to the scheduling of the dredging. And that's a big issue because once EPA is done, PER comes in and dredges after they do. And so there's some, you know, a sampling that needs to be done in coordination on that aspect of it to make sure one doesn't affect the other. The EPA project did call for some capping once it was done. And if they can coordinate the efforts, I'm not so sure they can't just move from one phase to the next with PER involvement. But the next two items in your list there from DEQ, and I'll give you a chance just to read through those. As I, but the first is regarding the an agreement between DEQ and PER related to operation and maintenance of that AWI wall. The AWI wall would be the wall EPA's building, and then will be filled behind it. And so what DEQ wanted was some, you know, agreement between the parties so that should there be maintenance requirements based on PER's use of the site in the future, that they bear that responsibility and the state doesn't have to do something as a result of their activities. And from the big picture of the state as a whole, not just DEQ and VMRC, you know, it certainly seems like the state, it's a proper thing for the state to do to sort of give some responsibility for that maintenance if they're going to use the property to PER down the road. What I didn't want us to do, and you can see the additions I made there that called out the fact that the permittee shall, through an agreement with DEQ Office of Remediation Program, agree to perform the necessary operation and maintenance. So what I'm saying there through the change is that you got to get that agreement with PER. PER has to get that agreement with DEQ, not with us, because that's us for Superfund activity. And the last item, bullet item there, the permittee shall provide, and I put in proof of a sufficient bond or financial assurance acceptable to DEQ Office of Remediation Program. Again, as they had worded it, it suggested we would hold the bond. And if something goes wrong, then we call the bond and correct the problem. And this was related to, again, the AWI wall, the EPA wall, and since that's a Superfund component of this project, that's something DEQ deals with in terms of the remediation program, and if there's a bond necessary, it seems like to me it's appropriate that PER and DEQ work that out, and as a result, if problems arise through maintenance of the AWI EPA wall, then EPA or DEQ and PER work that out and resolve it through use of that bond if necessary, rather than us hold the bond and try to figure out when it's called and when it's not called, because I could see if we were involved in that, PER would say, we're doing what we need to do.
DEQ might say, well, we don't think they are. You call the bond and correct the problem, and I think that's better for DEQ to handle.
Okay. Any questions for Tony? Yes, Mr. Plummer.
On this subject, I have some other questions on different areas, but on this subject of the DEQ agreement, is there any chance at all, and I don't know if this has been explored, that the agreement between PER and DEQ would alter the proposed project in any way in the design of the project and what would ultimately be needed to be approved by this commission?
I guess it's possible, and I would just suggest that if down the road after we issue a permit or we're withholding actual issuance of the permit, something has to be amended in terms of where the wall ties in together and how it's constructed and the nature of the encroachment, then I think we would just have to deal with a modification request at that time if you go the route of issuing the permit and the permit's done. If, however, you withheld issuance pending all this to be done and they submitted some modification, I think if you give us some latitude to work within the scope of what's there, we could recognize that through the new permit documents and that would become the permit that's finally issued. So a bit depends on whether it's done up front before the permit's issued or whether it's permit conditions. But if the permit's issued with specific distances and locations of walls, then they would have to get a modification to that if that changed.
Mr. Kugelman?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Plummer, I also want to speak to this with respect to alteration of the project. Mr. Crockett can probably speak to this a lot better than I can, but being a Superfund site, PER is obtaining this under what's called bona fide purchaser protection. And so if they do anything that deviates from the remediation from the EPA, they lose that protection and are on the hook themselves right. for any kind of pollution.
This is a $98 million Superfund cleanup that's going on.
Actually, it's $110 million
now. It's $110
now. And it's probably going to go up some more over the years. But I suspect that PER is going to do everything in their power not to violate the remediation, commonsensically.
Well, yeah, but the question is really whether or not we would be faced with a slightly altered project to consider should DEQ say, you know, we have changed our minds about this, we want this done on the oversight of this Superfund cleanup, and that's one concern I had. And the other concern, I don't know if you'd discuss this with DEQ, was whether or not them's concern over the upland contamination was going to be addressed in DEQ's conditions. And I don't see that within DEQ's proposed conditions, and I didn't see those in the staff's recommendation.
No, most of that is we feel it's going to be handled through the monitoring that has to be done for the dredging and that determination of whether it can go in Craney Island or it has to go to some appropriate containment site for hazardous type materials.
But not any pre-testing of the uplands. That was not.
I don't know, to be honest with you, what's required of that. I'm assuming it has to be done as part of the removal of the material to put it in Craney Island. And as a result, that would come out in that analysis.
Thank you.
Are there other questions?
Well, not about this particular subject.
Go ahead. If there are questions for staff, let's get through them.
Yeah, there was a question about making the seawall a little shorter. Do you have a drawing showing staff's recommendations of exactly the impact on that on the upland property? And
I'll comment. Of course, the black is the wall that's proposed. This is the last dolphin, and there's a track that actually runs along from dolphin to dolphin on these pylons. And the crane, which is here, see this?
Mm-hmm.
Runs along that track. You know, barges are in here, and the big ships are outboard. And, of course, this boom loads the ships that come in. And this will run up and down here and load into the ship. And what we're proposing is that the crane is not going to go past the last dolphin. That's where the track ends. The curvature of the track is not over here on this corner. So we felt that we could preserve some state submerged lands and reduce the filling amount by pulling the wall back about 70 feet to this dolphin here and then angle the bulkhead back to the appropriate tie-in point And they're working real hard with DEQ and EPA to determine the exact structure components. And they've submitted a drawing to us showing basically where that would go, a few feet in from what is depicted here, I think. But that would eliminate the need to fill in that much extra submerged lands. And so that was the rationale for our recommendation there. And there we go. And so they had, we saw some preliminary plans in draft form. This building did not set there. There was nothing here but the conveyor system. And then the building was added as storage. But we felt that that wasn't a water-dependent aspect. And so reducing it here would just mean some reconfiguration of the conveyor system to more come closer this way. But we felt we could save some filling as a result. And that was the basis for our recommendation.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question from Ms. Woodward about the proposed mitigation. Thanks for the presentation, first of all, but you had a couple of slides that I think depicted some of the on-site mitigation that would occur. And I was curious to know how the mitigation site would provide ecological services on-site if it were encapsulated in the bulkhead. It appeared from one of the overhead plan view drawings that that site might be actually contained within the bulkhead. So can you clarify that?
I will do my best to, and then I'm sure the representatives for PER can address those as well. I believe in this particular section, the bulkhead will be at a height between mean low water and mean high water, and so it will allow tidal inundation of this area.
It does, and I appreciate it. I just saw the overhead drawing and was curious to know how there would be effective flow to that area and so forth.
Any other questions of staff at this point? Seeing none, let's hear from the applicant.
Another question.
Good morning. Let me are both of you going to testify? I assume you will, Mr. Crockett.
You swear answer the questions if necessary.
You swear the testimony you'll give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
My name is John Paul Woodley, and with me is my colleague Robert Crockett, representing PER Properties in this application. I want to say that we have had a very positive experience working with Woodward, Tony Watkinson, on the staff. They've certainly done everything, and the commission should be very proud of the work they've done on this, and all the other applications that you've seen. we've been working with them for many months now. Justine herself has been on the site on at least four occasions, and probably more. And the recommendation that you see is reflective of that thoughtful hard work and thoughtful consideration. I want to point out essentially what we're doing here is creating a productive landscape, productive facility that's capable of supporting export, supporting agriculture, supporting jobs in the city of Portsmouth and the Commonwealth of Virginia, and also paying taxes to the city of Portsmouth on land that has been historically for more than a century used for heavy industrial purposes and has for more than a generation been entirely vacant, fallow, and of no use or value to the community. This facility sits next to the most contaminated piece of property in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And your applicant has stepped forward, has said he is that we are willing to undertake this activity on this location to with all due care and diligence to undertake the risks involved in it. And to create some value for the community on what otherwise would be blighted landscape. We have absolutely the highest regard for the recommendations that have been made today, and concur with them in every regard but two. The first is the question of the moving the wall that we've proposed and cutting it off at the end of the last of the channelward mooring dolphins. And those of you who know me know that I'm not a maritime man, but I'll do my best here. The first point we would make is that even with that, we would still, the plans call for a mooring dolphin, excuse me, on the landward side at the corner of the where the return of the bulkhead comes back to the AWI.
Excuse me, Mr. Woodley, can we get that slide up on the screen? That might help.
Then, you know, this is what we're trying to do with this is make the most use of a very constrained site. This is 16 acres. It's got only so much that is riverfront. And, you know, we're going to be mooring big ships right in here. And at some point, somebody's going to want to lay something down in this area. And so, you know, it's that the need for just operational flexibility on what is already a very constrained site is what leads us to suggest that we are not unduly encroaching on the Commonwealth's bottom. The other thing we would like to mention in regard to the recommendations concerns those that have recently come forward from DEQ. And we have been working with DEQ and with the EPA on site and in the regional headquarters for EPA for, I guess, 18 months now on a very regular basis, and we have a very good relationship with those agencies in making this come forward, because they appreciate as well what we are trying to accomplish. We believe of the five, well, first of all, we believe that Mr. Watkinson's suggestion is entirely appropriate with respect to the last two, that's we would much rather see that. Actually, we believe that of the five, the first three are entirely unexceptional. The fourth and fifth, though, we just feel that takes the MRC permit outside of the commission's purview to some slight degree. Our difficulty with this is that we are working in a very complex arena which I have compared to a long line of dominoes. You've seen the demonstrations they have of the man sets up thousands of dominoes one after another, and you push the first one over and the rest of them go, but unless the first one is pushed over, none of them happens. We can't get ourselves in a position with this project the first domino can't fall until the last one does. And so we're anxious to get a permit, get as few encumbrances on that permit as we can, and then because we will have to approach now the the Corps of Engineers, they will have their own process that they undertake. EPA and DEQ will participate in that as well. And so we have basically would like to see a few contingencies on the permit that the Commission grants as is consistent with the protection of the resource that is committed to your to your control and to your stewardship, that is consistent with the fostering the public interest, which we believe is very strongly fostered in this project. We would be delighted to answer any questions that may arise.
Mr. Crockett, do you want to add anything at this point?
Commissioner, just to Commissioner Plumlee's point, I can't.
Say your full name.
Oh, my name is Robert Crockett, and I'm a representative of PER Properties. The coordination to get to this point today has taken almost 2 years. The first meeting I had with DEQ was a little less than 24 months ago.
Right.
The extraordinary communication and the coordination with VMRC, with DEQ, with EPA, has been unlike any project I've ever been involved in. I've been involved in this business for almost 30 years. It's absolutely incredible. So, anyway, I just wanted to make a comment to the extraordinary coordination that's been going on.
May I ask one question, Mr. Crockett? Okay. Tell me a little bit about PER, because I'm not familiar with PER Properties, just so I understand your experience in the industry. That's sort of missing from the material that I went through, and I think that might be useful.
It's, the PER Properties is a coordination of developers headed by Mr. Jim Salmons of Salmons, Inc., a granary developer over in Virginia Beach. It also is a being funded by another company, which I'm not allowed to name, which is a national granary company. So between the two of those, they are funding the project. Fair enough?
Mr. Robbins?
And, but there is no other PER facility like
no,
this in the United States
terminal.
Currently.
There is another terminal that exports out of Virginia Beach, however.
Okay.
The landline is a facility.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, Mr. Crockett, I'd like to hear a little bit more about the staff recommendation for the last 70 feet of the bulkhead. We heard from Mr. Woodley that there was some concern about a potential loss of operational flexibility, but the way this is drawn, the crane would run the full length of the bulkhead, and the staff report, it indicates that the facility would be servicing Panamax-class vessels. Can you give us any more specific detail about the issues that hinge on this aspect of the recommendation, because that is one of the specific recommendations that's included in the staff report.
Mr. Robbins, I'll just reemphasize what Mr. Woodley had said earlier. The crane will run the entire length of the wharf, and I'm going to use. You mind if I go over here? Is that a problem?
Go ahead. Just speak
as a pointer, I believe.
The crane will run the entire length of the landward wharf, and you'll see the 10-by-10 landward dolphin that JP mentioned just a second ago. The crane, which is not reflected on there, Mr. Watkinson, and this is something that I'll correct from what Tony had said, the crane is not going to run on two tracks. Actually, as he indicated, the train will the seaward side of the crane will actually be on a floating barge, a minimal barge, that will then transfer the length of the wharf and not on the track, as Tony had mentioned just a second ago. So the design of the wharf is designed for that crane to extend to as broad a space as possible along the entire landward side of the wharf. So the mooring dolphin is critical, you know, obviously, for the ships, for the vessels.
This mooring dolphin right there.
Thank you. Yes, and then the seaward dolphin too, Commissioner Fox. So that is the seaward side of the dolphin. But again, the crane will run the entire side or length of the sheet pile wall on the landward side. Does that help?
Well, just again to get back to the question of how that affects things. If you shorten that by 70 feet, can you or can you not fully service the Panamax class vessel?
That's a good question. I don't know if we have anybody here that could really answer that, Commissioner Robbins. But again, again, the engineers, we're using Moffitt Nickel to design the wharf, and quite frankly, they're, I have to believe, the scope and scale that they have suggested is designed for that purpose.
Thank you.
Mr. Plumlee.
And I don't know if Mr. Crockett or Mr. Woodley would like to address these questions, but, you know, the VIMS has raised a lot of concern about the conversion to upland, the 1 acre, and I haven't heard discussed yet the importance of the upland to the project generally, other than I know, you know, it's within the plan, you know. And I think it might be important to cover that topic now while you're here instead of waiting to try to get it on the back end of the hearing. So if either of you want to address that, I think it might be useful. And I'm referring to VIM specific. You've probably read VIM specific comments about the 1 acre, and it's raised a lot of concerns. And this is one of the lengthiest VIM reports I've ever seen, and all the projects that I've seen. So it might be a good time to try to address that.
With respect to the upland property, when the developers began to look at this property, we sat down with EPA extensively to go through, and the volume of information on this piece of property is extraordinarily extensive. Phase one, phase two goes back multiple years. In fact, the most recent one was done in, I think, 2004, 2005, phase two. So we are very familiar with the property itself, and we have a comfort letter with EPA that requires the developers to do certain things before they develop and during the development. DQ has a copy of that correspondence as well, the Brownfields group that sent you a letter just yesterday, by the way. But anyway, so again, the conversations with the regulatory bodies about the development of the upland property to this point has been extensive and will continue to be extensive, and there are certain requirements contained within that letter the developers require.
So TER is a bona fide purchaser within the confines of the voluntary remediation program?
Not just with the state, but with EPA as well.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak in favor of the project? Anyone in opposition to the project? Yes, sir. Swear the testimony you'll give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, sir.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Dwight Dixon. I'm the landowner of the property. I have my land grant back to 1711. I've got all 48 different deeds that trace from my deed back to that, and even the 1656 grant. As you all understand, that's protected by Virginia law, the grants. One thing, EPA, it's on the EPA site. They've checked the abstract of title back to the grant in 1711. And that site's available to PER. It's available to this board and all the members of the EPA project. Those documents, I measured them when they printed out. They're 2 3/4 inch thick. They cover every deed back to the 1711 grant. In addition to that, I have the abstract from the Norfolk Naval Shipyard purchase of the adjoining property, which is part of the grant that I have. They traced their grant back to the same 1711 Queen Anne grant that I have. One thing that everybody's neglected to state here is that we have a trespass suit against, or had a trespass suit against Fig Bridge on our property, which gives us the opportunity to prove title to our property.
Mr. Dixon, that suit was resolved, and the bridge was found not to be trespassing on your property, correct?
That's not correct.
Do you have a copy of that order with you?
No, I don't.
And isn't it also true that staff mentioned it earlier, and I'm somewhat familiar with the case. Didn't the court in Portsmouth decide that you did not have any special grant in the bottom land?
No, sir.
So did I misunderstand staff with that?
Yes, sir.
I did not misunderstand staff? Okay. I don't need any. I just wanted to make sure I heard it right. That's all. Because my recollection is yours.
Proceed, Mr. Dixon.
Yes, sir. If you talk about the suit that was brought by the city of Portsmouth, that's for a quit claim deed. And what it actually, what I had done was record this quit claim deed and attach the original 1711 land grant with a draft of what of the survey that's within the grant. Any engineer can take that grant and read it. And with a map, you can plat the same plat that I attached to that. It shows two property lines, the upland property by meets and bounds. And in 1711, you did not have to survey the rivers. All the survey I had to do was just call for the river. And anybody can read that grant and see that. That the quit claim deed, all it did was give fair notice to everybody. Anybody in Portsmouth on the Elizabeth River that grant exists. Even though it has been agreed to declare void, it does not affect the title, but it still gives notice. Anybody that searches the title is going to see that and know that there's a 1711 grant. So it serves its purpose. The trespass suit with Fig Bridge, which gives us the opportunity to prove our title, we non-suited that so that we could amend the pleadings. And we've got 6 months to do that, and in the next couple of months, we intend to refile that, and we're going to straighten this title up. And plenty of time for this permit to be issued later on. So that's basically the way that the legal argument stands today.
Okay.
PER is blocking my entrance to the river. I want to use Panamax vessels to deliver to my property. Use conveyor systems, self-unloading systems. And the Bernard Orndorff, which I've been on the board and went through it, it's a 75,000 gross ton vessel. And last Tuesday I talked with Linda Figg, and she, over several conversations, but she gave me recent drawings. They've changed the fender system to allow that vessel can come between Pier 19 and 20. 20 is a major pier on the west side of the river, and that vessel can hopefully go between those, and the conveyor can be used to offload the material onto a pier. We'll have to extend the pier out at this time because of the bridge. If the bridge wasn't there, we could dredge, and the conveyor would have reached the EPA bulkhead. EPA will fill in the bulkhead. It will be solid, and they've guaranteed that my trucks can run on that filled-in area. This dolphin that's shown in red right here is across the pierhead line, and when it will interfere and actually block my Panax vessel from coming in there. If you see this small dotted line to the left of that, that's the pierhead line. In addition to that, you can see the solid lines where that area was dredged to get back to my pier, the former pier, which is on back further. But the 34, 32, and 30 foot and 28 was dredged area to allow access entrance to my pier over the years where they accepted cargo. That is the inlet, too. And the whole inlet has been used historically by my prior owners to service the dock facilities there. They imported wood from all over the world. And we planned the Navy's dredging to 47 feet with a 42-foot overdraft to the Norfolk Naval. I mean, to the Norfolk Portsmouth Bell Line Bridge, and we plan to dredge the other 1,000 foot or so to bring that vessel. The vessel can come all the way through in between Pier 19 and 20 and service my property. I've also got a drainage issue. My property is historically drained into the river. And as EPA has changed my drainage to cross PER property. And that issue needs to be addressed so that my property drains, still drains directly into the Elizabeth River. And these 2x2 piers, pilings, interfere with me bringing barges and stuff into the facility that EPA will put in there for me. So, but basically, what we have here is not an open channel. It's really an inlet. And that inlet divides different from what you would normally if you faced on a riverbank. So part of that inlet is certainly mine. There's no question about it. And Ms. Woodward brought up a very interesting question. It'll be 3 years before EPA finishes their project. These people are premature in getting this this application, several years premature. And actually, when she says that all the property interest has to be settled with EPA, that's going to be years down the road before that's settled, because they're going to have to settle with me, and we're going to have to get that title straight. So you're 2 or 3 years ahead of time asking for this permit, and it interferes tremendously with what I'm doing, and I went over my plans with my engineer, and he assures me that we can service this property with a Panamax vessel.
Finished?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. We've got some questions. Mr. Plummer?
Mr. Dixon, is your property in the city of Portsmouth?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. And the suit that was resolved by a judge in Portsmouth, that involved merely the declaration that you made regarding the land grant, right?
The quick
I understand you. The quick
it wasn't resolved by a judge. It was by consent decree.
Okay, so you entered some consent order on that.
We agreed to that. It's not part of the title. We don't need it. It's just notice. It's notice to anybody that public notice like y'all here.
Thank you.
Ms. Fox?
Could we have the slide up there that shows Mr. Dixon's property? Now, Mr. Dixon, how do you propose to, where would the Panamax ships be to access your property?
This fender system right here has been redesigned by Ms. Figg, and they're going to make that smaller. This is Pier 20 right here.
Mm-hmm.
This is Pier 19. She has assured me that that vessel is, the beam on it is 106 feet, and she's assured me that we have at least 6 foot extra in there. And my engineer is reviewing that, and they sent us drawings of this new arrangement that she made there, and he's reviewing that to make sure that we can get that vessel in. The real problem comes when the second bridge is built to the south. This Pier 19 is going to come over about 30 foot on over this property line here, and that would restrict it to 70 foot. And I'd ask my engineer, we'd want it to. For the vessel to be backed in so that if it's caught on fire, it could be towed out. Well, the only way this thing is going to work is for it to come in with the bow to the south, and the conveyor will reach 200 foot over the side. So we'll be able to unload without interfering with that Pier 19 on the second bridge. If we come in from the and head the ship to the south upstream.
All right, so you're going to have what, conveyors? This will be solid ground after EPA finishes.
That's correct. And yeah, we'll extend the pier as necessary.
All right, but your property, will this be your property then?
Yes, sir. And EPA has researched that, and the letter attached to my letter says that EPA believes that grant extends to the center, and they think that I own that property and deal with me as such.
All right.
I gave them leases
the ship,
as such.
The ship that you propose loading or unloading would be laying along like this?
That's correct.
And your conveyors and cranes and so forth would come out from here. That's the plan.
Yes, the ship will self-unload. You don't need any ship's gear. The advantage of the self-unloaders, you don't need gear on land to take care of. This pier right here interferes with the alignment of that ship right there. That one does for sure. And this area here interferes with the use of my property. All of this in here does.
Mr. Shirt?
Can I see your...
Sure.
I don't understand how the riparian rights of PRE property extend out from their property line out here. So I don't understand how you having... How can you claim that you have full use of this area, which is their riparian area?
I'm not sure that they have the riparian rights. I own the bottom. I don't have riparian rights. I own the bottom.
That,
I just want to be clear for the commission. There is, we have a letter from the Portsmouth city attorney that disputes that. And everything I've reviewed does not comport with that. So you say it's clear and uncontroverted, but there's a court action, and the city of North Portsmouth's attorney disagree with your contention.
Well, he didn't try the case. There's no court order on that.
Either way, and you non-suited your case.
It's non-suited at this point, but we have the right to bring that back.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, but that.
Okay.
On the same grounds.
In the same court, yes.
In the same court, yes, sir. And we will bring it back.
We'll be able to do that, but I'm just saying, I want to make sure the commission understands.
Well, I'd like for them to understand, too. We intend to bring that back in the next few months, and there's no reason to approve this permit under these conditions. And particularly if they've got to prove their property rights, it's going to take them years to prove that property rights. It was the recommendation that has been...
And Mr. Dixon, if it's confidential, don't feel like you're required to answer this question, but can you share with us why you chose to enter an order or enter some type of agreement to not go forward with your quitclaim deed?
Well, it wasn't necessary at all for the title. Not necessary whatsoever. All that was notice. It was a waste of time and money to sit there because we can't take anything away from anybody that has a claim with that quick claim deed. You know, they've got good title. It actually reinforces their title. I don't see why they're so upset. I mean, they're not really that upset. It reinforces every one of them has as strong a title as I have.
But you saw it was necessary to assert so that people would know that you were making that claim at the time that you did it, and then you chose to withdraw it, but you intend to go forward with it if there's construction or some plan.
No, we're going forward with it regardless of this.
Okay.
Well, with the bridge people, we're going to prove the title. Either prove or disprove. It's going to be proved here pretty quick.
Any further questions, Mr. Tank?
Mr. Dixon, what kind of business are you currently in? Are you in sort of an import-export business?
No,
do you have any experience as a result?
I've got a quarry background. I know the operations of quarries. Worked in them since I was a boy.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Dixon.
Yes, sir.
Anyone else who wishes to speak in opposition?
My name is Roger Hopper, and I'm an attorney in Saluda, Virginia. I represent Mr. Dixon, and I'm trying to help you understand what's going on. Mr. Dixon doesn't claim to own the bottom out to the thread of the river by virtue of a quitclaim deed. He has two general warranty deeds in the year 2000 that conveys his property out to the Port Warden's line. He claims that he owns from the Port Warden's line out to the middle of the river by virtue of an unbroken chain of title that goes back to a land grant from the King Grant. And that is his claim. He had a quitclaim deed as a vehicle to put a drawing to record to show people that he was claiming under a King's Grant. This was done by him personally. I mean, this was not an attorney that did any of this. But it really bears no, it has no legal efficacy in this discussion because he doesn't claim to own anything by virtue of that. So the city attorney, he didn't choose to include in his submission to you my answer and my motion to dismiss and my demur. The day he got which he called me and said, let's settle the case. Be that as it may, it merely removes the quitclaim deed under which we did not claim the title out to the river anyway. Mr. Dixon claims that, and the purpose of discussing it here is to know that it's consistent. As of this minute, when we're talking, he has no decree saying that he owns it. So as far as we're concerned right now, the state of Virginia presumptively owns it.
Correct.
We don't want you to be shocked when the Circuit Court of Portsmouth says that he does.
And you're certain that's the way it's going to go?
Positively. Well, let me just say this. The whole thing came up when we filed a motion, trespass motion against the bridge company. Their law firm, Goffman and Knowles, filed a motion to dismiss in a demur. And it was argued. It was briefed. And it was argued. And this very point was argued. And the court overruled their motion for summary judgment and overruled their demur and set the case for trial.
And what happened with that case?
We have non-suited the case.
I see.
We need to add another count.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Which we're going to do.
That's certainly appropriate.
Anyone else in opposition? Seeing none, Mr. Woodley, Mr. Crockett, you have an opportunity to rebut anything you've heard? All right. And the matter's before the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more from counsel about the status of the potential encumbrance of the adjoining property and whether or not we are, in fact, free and appropriate in moving forward with considering the approving the application consistent with staff recommendation.
It is the opinion of counsel that without the documentation in front of me, I cannot say one way or the other whether Mr. Dixon has any colorable claim to the bottom land. It is also my understanding, based on different meetings I've had on these issues with different folks, that Mr. Dixon does not have what it takes to show that he owns the bottom land. But, you know, and what's absent from the drawings that are before the commission right now is the Port Warden's line, and I think there's some agreement about some ownership out towards that, but not past that. But I'm unclear about that as well. Getting back to the general question, it may be, in the academic sense, that the commission awards the permit, and presuming that Mr. Dixon prevails, to the extent that the permit is over what may be Mr. Dixon's bottom land, we'd have to invalidate that because we didn't have the jurisdiction to issue it. Presuming he prevails. If he does not prevail, then we're fine.
Thank you.
But I'm still unclear, as I see, or maybe y'all are more clear as to what where he's claiming his bottom land goes on this picture. I don't know.
So we are to move forward with the assumption that the state of Virginia owns the river bottom here.
Presumably we own it, and they brought a quiet title action, something to clear up the title, something akin to a quiet title action. And in the face of their purported victories, they non-suited, which is interesting to me as a litigator.
Okay.
I mean, I can't use my crystal ball, per se.
Right.
Well, I don't think we can draw any conclusions about what's taken place so far in the courtroom unless we see an order in front of us.
That's true.
But we're not the appropriate body to determine ownership of the bottom unless it's proven otherwise. We presume we're in a position to determine this based on staff recommendations, and if that proves to be untrue at a later time, then that has its own implications. But I guess my sense is that you know, it's the burden of the party making the claim to go forward and to prevail or not prevail on their claim, and then if a court decides to put some sort of injunction on the project until that's resolved, that's up to a court. But we're not in a position to do all that as a body. I wouldn't imagine.
Mr. Plumley actually has a very good point. Presumptively, by statute, the Commonwealth owns the bottom. No one's rebutted that presumption, despite claims to the contrary. It's not been determined by a court of law. So I believe that in response, getting back to Mr. Robbins' question, in light of Mr. Plumley's amplification, that the commission's in a position to be able to move forward on the permit today and go forward with that.
Mr. Plumley? Kind of moving past the title issue, I mean, there was a lot written in this packet and not much in the way of testimony to try to address, from the perspective of VIMS in particular, the concerns that VIMS had about contamination on the property. And that did after I read their report, I was quite concerned about that. But they did not come and address it, and I've not heard anyone come in opposition and set forth anything. I know the applicant had mentioned there being some type of environmental studies performed some years ago. I don't know the results of those phase one and two environmental studies that were done. But them seemed quite adamant that if you're going to go forward and clean up this part of the river and spend all the money that you're spending to do it, that you may not want to do that without appropriate testing of this area that's going to be converted to upland. So that's one thing that has concerned me today, and there hasn't really been someone there to address that issue, and I don't know if staff can address it without assistance from VIMS or anyone coming forward.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for VIMS. Are you talking about the area that's going to be filled with sometimes not a...
The area to be filled is right there.
Yeah, and I'll use the pointer on the computer. You're talking about the area here that will be filled?
Well, you've got the area, I'm speaking for Mr. Plumley now, but you've got the area to be filled, and then you've got this area that is to be dredged up here, and there may be contamination in that we don't know.
Yeah, well, I'll adjust it in two phases. We'll talk about the filled area and then the area that's going to be dredged. I know Zim's had some concern about filling an area over which there was a remediation activity, meaning public monies and some private monies, I suppose, are going into this remediation, dredge out the contamination, cap it in the end, and as a result, it was an idea to restore the river. And so why would you fill back on top of that? And I think the staff response to that is, given the nature of this project and the need for this project and the dimensions of where the railroad go, they have a justifiable project and a justifiable need for the fill for a terminal port facility. And we did sort of, as you know, you've heard, suggest that could be reduced a little bit to eliminate that fill. So that issue is it will be clean fill placed on top of that dredged area by EPA in the area of this bulkhead. That will be upland fill. It won't be contaminated material from the river or dredged material from the river. It will be clean fill. So if there was contamination still under what EPA did, they stopped dredging at a certain action level, basically, meaning they're going to get it back to a certain amount. It's contaminated some below a certain level of contamination. They're not going to worry about dredging further. And they're still, I think, actively testing and determining what needs to be done out there. It's a bit of a moving target for EPA as to what they're going to do. So, and as you've heard, that all will be done in conjunction with, or PER will have to design their project in conjunction with that ongoing evaluation and work. So, anyway, if EPA dredges contamination out, it gets covered up by PER with clean material and hopefully sequester.
Well, VIMS uses the phrase, conduct soil tests to verify absence of unknown upland contamination sources. So that kind of confusing phrasing means...
Yeah, I think what they're talking about is...
That the sand replacement has been properly tested, not necessarily the upland. Is that what that phrase is intended to mean?
That's what that meant. I would have taken it to mean, as you work in the upland area and maybe dredge this part away, you do the adequate testing to make sure there's no contamination that's disturbed that gets into the river from the upland components of the project. But we don't have any authority over that. In fact, if they dredge, once they get below the beach here or above the beach area, we're not permitting that, but we are permitting the removal of this beach area and the conversion through the dredging to submerged lands. I would hope that the contamination evaluations that need to occur for all of this area by PER for determining whether a guy can go in Craney Island or it has to go to some other suitable facility would help cover that aspect of the work within that excavated area along the front of the wall.
Yeah, well, I have them on the on the subject. They also raised the issue of the proposed filling of the 1 acre not being necessary to support the adjacent EPA bulkhead. VIMS has made that claim. And that was one of the items I thought would probably be addressed in the DEQ agreement with PER and may modify somewhat this project. So, you know, those are questions I had, and nobody really appeared to address any of that. We've talked generally with the applicant about some of these things but didn't get to those specifics, and I don't know if the staff feels entirely comfortable with it. I'm not sure.
I mean, to address the point of the filling in the area not being justified to protect the wall back here, I mean, I think we've heard from the applicant that it's their contention that if they build this wall out here for their purposes, which we feel is justified, that it serves also to stabilize this wall that EPA has built, and down the road, beyond 100 years, really, it helps preserve that wall and eliminates the possibility of some problem with that wall and further contamination of the river. So the applicant was using that component as some additional justification for the need to build this much of a wall in here. It was really to help secure this wall in conjunction with what they're doing on the site. Now, it sounded like VIMS took some exception to whether or not that was proven to be necessary or not. But all we have is the applicant's contention. I think that they feel that would occur, I think, just by some common sense analysis. There has to be some benefit unless they really do something wrong. But the amount of fill that's necessary was just our sort of question.
Thank you.
Mr. Fox.
While you're standing there, it may have come up in the discussion and I missed it or I've forgotten it or something, but Why are we addressing this issue today as opposed to some time in the future when more information perhaps will be known?
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, could we have just held on to this and waited for things to be done and say, you've got to get all this done before we even bring it to the commission? It was our contention that two things going on here. One, it was basically ripe for review based on what we know and the fact that PER wanted to move forward. As Mr. Woodley explained, the domino effect. I mean, they need to get certain things recognized and approved so they can move forward with their planning and efforts and whatnot. The other aspect of it is a little bit related to state code and the Ditches and Dunes Ordinance. We're required to hold a hearing within 60 days of receipt of a complete application. Now, we have some latitude in determining what necessary information we need, but in this case, they had a complete application for purposes of the beach and dune area, and the state code asked us to hear it within 60 days. I mean, we asked for some additional information. We've had the application longer than 60 days, but they've supplied what we asked for. And so for those two reasons, we felt it was appropriate to move forward with the appropriate conditions to recognize the other circumstances of the site.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While you're up here, Tony, I did want to talk a little bit more, if we could, about the proposed conditions.
Okay.
So looking through the staff recommendations in the original staff assessment, we have six recommended conditions. We then were presented with information that appeared in the DEQ letter. You submitted some additional language that appears to add five additional conditions. And two of those have been modified at your recommendation. We heard some testimony about those. Can you speak a little further about the necessity for them, specifically, for example, with the proof of a bond? You feel that's necessary in order to protect the public interest with respect to that aspect of the project, or can you just detail that a little bit more for us?
I'll try to characterize what I view as the issue here, and again, I don't want to speak for DEQ, but this was their suggestion and recommendation that there be some bond in place. And again, going back to the changes I had proposed versus the DEQ letter condition, I think that's a bond that's between basically DEQ and the remediation program and PER. But the idea from a big picture in the Commonwealth is that PER is making use eventually of the land and the bulkhead area created by EPA that the state has to take on some responsibility for. If PER is doing their work, they go bankrupt, they go away, and it's left in a state that could cause further contamination or problems, I think DEQ wanted to have money available to correct the problem. It's how I see it. And so this helps safeguard the Commonwealth's interest in the maintenance and preservation of that wall in some perpetuity. I don't know how long the bond would be in place, but that would be up to PER and DEQ to work that out just to show us proof that they've got it as a permit condition.
Tony, does PER need a permit from DEQ for any of this activity?
Yes, they do. They require a Virginia Water Protection Permit for the dredging operations, and that's one thing DEQ is looking into is the contamination and whatnot in the river with regard to water quality issues that might result from the dredging operation.
I'm curious why DEQ would ask us to add these five conditions to our permit rather than make them part of their own permit.
I mean, I think they all weave together to some extent from the state's perspective, and it provides the security for the state to require these things of the applicant. But, I don't want to speak for DEQ, but I would think they could put whatever conditions they think are appropriate in their permits as well.
Does the applicant object to these suggested conditions?
Mr. Woodley?
I guess what I want to say is that John Paul Woodley back to testify again, and
do you have a copy of this?
We have a copy received very recently. I think that we have a general objection to all of them because we don't think they pertain to this commission's responsibilities. We have no practical objection to 1, 2, and 3. 1, 2, and 3 are entirely reasonable. We were going to do all of that, and we had no difficulty with it whatsoever. 4 and 5 are also not wholly unreasonable, although I don't know whether such a bond is available or what cost it would be. It's something that's just hit us, and so I can't speak really to the practicability of it. It is, but our objection to it would be that we are going to work with EPA, DEQ, US EPA, DEQ, and the Corps of Engineers to accomplish this this work in a way that is entirely respectful of the AWI Superfund. Perhaps not perfectly clear. They are not remediating the AWI. US EPA is not remediating the AWI site in the way that we think of remediation. They are containing the dangerous materials behind the wall that we're describing. Behind this, if I can point to it, behind this wall, will be contained some of the worst contaminants that we have in the Commonwealth. Then we're going to be operating a light industrial operation, a marine terminal on top of it, including railroad and all this, all on top of this contaminant contained by this wall. We're then putting this wall in. The question is, we believe that if you do anything, if you're going to operate out here and you do anything but fill this area, that you're that you are providing an unacceptable level of risk to breaching this containment. That is our position, and that's how we intend to go forward with this project. Now, that there's nothing incompatible with the conditions that are set out, including numbers 4 and 5. But they condition this, the approval of this body on decisions by some other authority, and an authority which has its own statutory responsibilities and its own statutory capabilities of enforcing its views and its own processes. And so, to that extent, our real objection, I guess, is more of a process objection. If DEQ wants these, then they can ask for them in the context of their process, or they can get EPA to ask for them, or maybe the Corps would make that a condition.
But you have no objection to us conditioning release of the permit upon the binding agreement being reached between your company and DEQ? Is there any objection to that? Because they can certainly add as a condition all the things that they're listing as part of their agreement.
Well, certainly we're this is not going to go forward in a way that is we recognize and have always recognized that this is not going to go forward in a way that is that presents undue risk to the breach of the containment at AWI. In fact, we believe that this is some evidence of it, that the Commonwealth fully intends to have PER assume the liability and the responsibility for maintenance of the containment that we are operating on top of and that we are filling behind or in front of. And that's perfectly reasonable. We intend for that to be our property, and so we're going to end up with that responsibility.
And the long-term financial assurance that you'll be able to do that work is also going to be made, I would presume, part of that agreement.
It would not surprise me. So, what we're seeking to resolve here today are those issues that can be resolved within the purview of the commission, and we believe we have all the facts necessary at this time to support those determinations and to demonstrate that those determinations are in the public interest. And so, I go back to my domino analogy. We can't be placed in a position and nor is it in the public interest for us to be placed in the position of having of the first domino is not allowed to fall until the last one falls.
Well, and you would understand better than anybody that as an agency of the state, we're going to defer to other agencies of the state. I mean, make sure we do this right. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Mr. Schick?
Yeah, I just there isn't anybody from DEQ that's here, is there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Okay. I just kind of feel like, you know, this is a little bit outside of what, you know, we normally do. It's, you know, usually we take, you know, say, okay, the health department has these restrictions. Well, this is something where they're asking us to put restrictions on for them. It just seems a little out of the norm for us, and maybe a little bit more of the apple than we need to bite at this time. So that's my feeling. I don't know. I don't want to, you know, step on anybody's toes by doing that. But on the other hand, I think that, you know, that might be something we may want to consider.
I'd like to just make one comment relative to some of the issues associated with this. And I would just sort of point out with regard to the DEQ suggestions for conditions that started out as just things to be addressed before the permit would be issued, that, one, what PER is doing here is somewhat dependent on the EPA wall being there. I mean, it would have been hard, as we've told the applicant, to justify this project in that much filling if the EPA wall wasn't going in. That the property probably would have been suited for something else but not this, because that would have been an overwhelming amount of fill. And two, that we are permitting activity that could affect the EPA wall. I mean, even the fill and the bulkhead that we are authorizing outside of what EPA is contemplating doing and what the EQ would have and the state would have responsibility for, we're permitting that. And so it's there's a pretty tight link between that project and what can be done here that would require permit from this agency. And so from that perspective, I think that's how we ended up with the, you know, recognizing the DEQ suggestions for requirements seemed not unreasonable, but probably in line with overall protection of the Commonwealth's interest here.
Thank you. Mr. Robbins?
Mr. Chairman, and I don't. If I could ask Mr. Watkinson, you know, I don't question whether or not they're consistent with the protection of the Commonwealth's interest. I guess the other question, though, is if, in terms of the permitting process, and this gets back to really the scope of our programs and jurisdiction, et cetera. In terms of the permitting process, if DEQ is going to have to issue a water quality permit for the dredging aspect of the operation, could these other conditions they propose be attached to that permit, or are those outside of the scope of their permitting process relative to a water quality permit for dredging?
I might have an educated guess. It would be a guess, and I guess that I don't know that they could do the same thing with their permit relative to what they are looking at from a water quality perspective. But it's possible. I just don't know. I think your overall, I guess, answer to the question, not just with the DEQ permit, but other reviews associated with this, and through the Office of Remediation Programs at DEQ. I mean, there's a number of entities that are involved in this from an authorization standpoint. And I guess, you know, you could step back and say, well, it's not directly under VMRC, and therefore some of these things ought to be covered by somebody else. But we don't exactly know what that's going to be. I think based on the applicant's comments today, there certainly will be a good faith effort to make sure they're addressed, and they'll be take different forms. But right now, we don't know that for sure, and our vehicle was one opportunity to help ensure that occurs. So.
I'm not trying to wear out Tony, but this issue of our jurisdiction is very important, because in either side, it can end up in a court case, and we waste a lot of time and money. You know, we don't want to do that. I don't want to put you on the spot without any preparation, because it may take some time to look into this. But because, based on your statement that the wall is essential, this EPA wall is essential, does that mean, in your view, that
you could not deem this application prepared to come before us for review without the condition that this agreement be put in place prior to the release of the permit.
Oh, I mean, it got at some of those issues that, I mean, the question came up earlier about, well, did we have to come this soon? Could we have just waited for these issues to come up? And certainly, including the conditions or requirements, sort of addresses it at the end and says, okay, you know, from a use of state submerged land standpoint in the river, based on the circumstances, we think it's justified. But there's some details over ownership issues and maintenance that you got to address. And we're not going to make you do it before you get your permit or authorization from the commission, but recognize that that's got to be done.
Okay. Was there another hand up? All right. Seeing no, thank you, Tony. Well done by staff. Matters before the commission. I think it's time for a motion. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the discussion we've had about the permit conditions. And reading through them in detail, they do seem appear to be specific to the way the activity that's permitted by this specific permit would interact with the AWI remediation. You know, we have an application before us that's being proposed adjacent to what is obviously a very sensitive site given the nature of contamination there. So I think in light of that, and I think this is relevant also to the footprint, if you consider the proposed footprint and then also what we've heard about that relative to the staff recommendation, there is some additional fill that's occurring because of the extent of the length of the bulkhead. But I think if we permit it as proposed, there is some benefit in terms of reducing the risk of destabilizing that EPA bulkhead. I mean, I think there's some public interest there, and it's a trade-off because we're giving up some habitat to do that. But it seems to me that there is some public benefit associated with that. Looking at the private benefit, we heard about operational flexibility. We also heard about the fact that they are going to be trying to service Panamax-class vessels. So it seems that the project as engineered is engineered for that specific purpose. Again, there are trade-offs. There's a loss of habitat. There's on-site mitigation. But I think there is some public interest in permitting it within the proposed footprint. I would offer a motion that we approve the project as requested together with the 11 conditions as amended by and recommended by commission staff.
If I can ask the movement if that would include the condition that there be an agreement, a binding agreement, which is not numbered. I don't believe it's numbered under staff recommendations.
I think those are being replaced now by the sheet that was.
So this paragraph gets replaced by the five that's on the separate sheet?
That's correct. So just to clarify the motion, it would include the six condition permits that are recommended by staff in the document together with the five supplemental that we just received that are amended and recommended by staff.
Is there a second to the motion?
Follow-up question, if I may. About the motion.
Let me. I've got a second by Mr. Schick. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd like to second the motion because I really feel that this is the kind of project that we really need for the future, because as the canal gets widened, these Panamax class ships are going to be searching for other ports to be able to utilize these ships, and so I think this is an asset to not only use a piece of ground that's been laid fallow and also property that's being reclaimed, you know, by the EPA, but also to serve a purpose for the Commonwealth far into the future. So I second it.
Mr. Tankard, on the motion.
On the motion, is that saying that we will allow the 70-foot section as the project has been applied for?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Further comments on the motion?
I'll make one quick comment. Certainly, since my period of time on the commission, it's the first time we've had to deal with a Superfund site. I don't know if the other members concur with that. So I think that these 11 measures are probably pertinent given the complexities of what's before us. So I would tend to vote for the proposed action.
Mr. Robbins, your motion also includes the royalty, the one-time royalty, as recommended by staff. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other comments on the motion? Mr. Plumlee.
Yeah, I just as a resident of Southampton Roads, I understand that the development in Portsmouth is critical for the city, that this operation is a critical operation, that the wall that's being constructed creates this opportunity, and I'm pleased to see a company come forward to take on a lot of responsibility and duty associated with this project. This is not going to be, we're not giving them the blessing and they don't look back from here. I mean, there's a lot of work that they're going to go through, and hopefully with their experience in the granary business, they'll be able to make that a very profitable location for them and for the people of Portsmouth. So that's my only comment.
Any other comments? Seeing none, ready to vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all.